This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Music lovers have been saying for years that the North Carolina Symphony is out of this world, but tomorrow they'll take it literally when they boldly go where no orchestra has gone before. The North Carolina Symphony stages a sci-fi spectacular tomorrow at May Mandy Concert Hall in Raleigh. George Takei, Mr. Sulu from Star Trek, will be there. And joining me now in the studio are Amy Mason and Amy Russell. Amy Mason plays the viola for the North Carolina Symphony. Amy Russell is artistic administrator with the symphony. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Brown.
Amy Russell, tell us about the sci-fi spectacular. What are we going to hear?
It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll hear all of your sort of intergalactic favorites from film and TV. So you've got your Star Wars and Superman and 2001 A Space Odyssey, E.T., and lots of music by John Williams. And we'll be led in that concert by Jack Everly, who's made a real name for himself conducting Pops concerts, and he's kind of a master in this area, and he created the show with his very good friend, George Takei. And he'll be the MC.
Well, and this music certainly leads itself to a symphony orchestra. I mean, this is with what we hear in the movies, right? And
absolutely.
On the stage. And so when you talk about putting a show together, I mean, is it just sort of collecting the music from these themes, or do you arrange it in a different way?
Yeah, I think Jack Everly has pretty masterfully selected all of this music. And what ties it together at the performance is George Takei. And he's a huge personality. And of course, everyone knows him from Star Trek, so this is right in his wheelhouse. And so he'll share his stories and talk about the music and lead us through the night.
He doesn't play anything, though.
No.
Okay, but he's going to do a lot of narration and that sort of thing. And, of course, it's got an important role. I mean, music, it's very interesting. Watch those sci-fi movies without the music and nobody gets scared. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a powerful part of the film.
Absolutely.
So then there are pieces, of course, I think probably the most well-known in terms of sci-fi movies and music that goes along with it would be this one. Also, Sprague Zarathustra, and of course, I think the theme from 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I think a lot of people feel like it was written for that movie, turns out it had been hanging around before that.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a pretty epic, major piece of the core repertoire of the orchestra, and it was adapted for that movie, and it couldn't be more perfect for it.
Tell us about that music, though, where it came from. I mean, tell us about the composition itself.
Sure, well, it's... it's a really serious piece of music, and it's a really epic tale that it tells, and it's very long, and most people know the fanfare only,
right.
From that film, and so it's fun when we get to play the entire thing.
Well, the awful thing about it, of course, is when the film came out, that was used in every single commercial and every introduction
right.
in for the next, like, 4 years.
Yeah, there's no separating
heard.
It from the film. That's
right. No. Amy Mason, tell us about, first of all, are you a sci-fi fan yourself?
You know, I love some Star Trek in my life.
What about playing this music? It is certainly orchestral music, without any doubt. It's big and it's bold. Is it different in any other way from playing some of the more classical pieces that you that we're more familiar with from the orchestra?
It is different. With classical music, you know, you practice your whole life certain scale patterns and different harmonic figures, and they appear a lot in classical repertoire. When you're playing something of this genre, it is different, especially with John Williams music. It's usually technically challenging for the string players and for brass players. It is tiring, to say the least. So it is different, but I also love it because when you play classical music, you have what you imagine to go along with, and you can visualize that. But when you get to play these pieces that you've heard in movies, it's so fun in a completely different way.
Do you? I mean, I guess that's it. You're so familiar with them in a different way. There are a lot of visuals to go along with it. Does it change how you approach music to be able to kind of see pictures with, if you've seen the film?
Yeah, I think so. And also just knowing something like Star Wars that you've heard your entire life, finally getting to play it. Sometimes it's almost a little harder because you're thinking, okay, I know exactly how this goes. And then you see it written out and it's not exactly what you expect. Sometimes it can throw you off a little bit, but it's so fun.
Star Wars, which sounds a little bit like this for those of you who have never heard it before. I'm not going to tell you what that is, but it will be part of the North Carolina Symphony Sci-Fi Spectacular tomorrow night, 7:30, May Mandy Concert Hall in Raleigh. You know, it's kind of interesting, Amy Russell, that we would – that this kind of music was written for films. I mean, in a way, it does suggest the largeness and the epic nature of these films. But why does it? I mean, if you think about an audience that may not be as familiar with classical music and the orchestral form and sound, it's a way of why is that familiar to why does that suggest epic even to people who have never been to an orchestra performance before?
Well, you don't. I mean, music is universal. You don't have to know anything about form or harmonics or anything to feel it and know what is being expressed. So it's just something everybody knows, and it's kind of an instant language that you understand.
Yeah, and sort of emotionally, it just gets to you. You just cannot hear all that brass and not have something happen to you.
Right.
And if that wasn't enough for you, we'll just bang on a timpani and that'll get you going. So, but and this also suggests the breadth and the range of the North Carolina Symphony. I mean, you know, there's a whole pop series. So you go from Radiohead to John Williams to, I mean, all of this kind of stuff in the course of a season. Kind of exciting to do as an orchestra.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it really shows it's sort of a celebration of the agility of the orchestra. They speak so many musical languages, so it's great that we can show that off. And it lets us, I hope, expand our audience, but also kind of deepen our connection with our existing audience. If you love the symphony, that's great. If you love Star Trek, you're going to be really excited about this show, you know.
Yeah, and Amy Mason, for you, again, as a violist, I guess having to go from one concert to another and one form to another, sometimes in the matter of just a week or so, I guess, huh? It's a lot of transition.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes in any given week, we can have a huge classical program, a pop show, an education concert. So we're always switching gears. And I think that's been, on the job, one of the biggest things I've had to get used to. And it's a whole new skill set, and I have such an appreciation for it.
Of course, the great thing about the orchestra is it is a statewide orchestra, so you travel around and you see audiences from different parts of the state. I've always been curious about that. Are audiences different in different parts of the state? Or regionally, do you find that people have different tastes and prefer one kind of music over another?
I guess I do think that, especially with the education concerts, it really shows different kids get so excited about different pieces, and it's not always the same thing. And it's really exciting to see, you know, it keeps each education concert fresh, or each concert fresh, because different people do really enjoy different aspects of the concert.
And I would think, too, with the education, I mean, for kids who have heard these films, or even young adults, heard the themes, seen the movie, you know, the idea that really there are musicians playing these notes, that this didn't happen because the credits rolled, it created this sound. In fact, there were musicians who had to make all this noise happen, this great noise. Are kids surprised by that? Are kids, particularly with music they're familiar with, if you introduce them to Beethoven for the first time, they might be excited about it, but they'd never heard it before. Now you play something familiar and they think, oh, that's how that works.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, especially with the video games concert that we just did last week or a couple weeks ago, I felt like all these people they've heard these video game themes over and over again, and realizing, oh, an orchestra recorded that once upon a time, and people were so excited. And I feel like that was a big, big reason why.
And composition, too. I mean, you can't demonstrate composition, but it can lead, especially, I guess, in the workshops, to discussions about how we put all this together and how these. So it's not just a consumption. It's not just something for consumers. This is something you can produce. You can either create the composition or make the sound. And I guess for kids, that would be a pretty exciting moment for them, too.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you can see them. I mean, they react emotionally to the music, and you can kind of see them dancing. But then you also see them, and we were talking about this before, start to conduct they see a conductor and that's something new. You don't hear the conductor, you know, and so they'll start to conduct in the audience, and that's a great connection for them to make.
Well, and also the level of collaboration that it takes. The fact is you can't have all those musicians on a stage trying to create a sound without some level of organization. Somebody's got to do that. Do you find what about these shows? We know that pop's style concerts are certainly designed in part to entertain, but also to bring in different audiences and grow the audience. Is it having that effect?
It absolutely is. And the Radiohead show that we just did a couple of weeks ago is a perfect example of that. Going into it, we knew that we wanted to seek a younger audience. And how do you do that? That's always the trick question. And we were really successful in doing that. I've never seen the concert hall look like that. I think the average age of patron was maybe 25, you know. And I don't think I've ever seen a concert hall with an orchestra anywhere look like that. It was an incredible night.
Amy Mason, how did you get into music?
Well, my mom was a pianist, or is a pianist, and I used to, late at night, she'd be practicing after all the kids were in bed, and I used to sneak out of bed and just sit at the top of the stairwell and listen to her practice, and I loved it, and I did try piano. I didn't really connect with it, but luckily my parents let me choose a different instrument, and I started lessons when I was almost 7 years old. And
did you start with viola?
I didn't. I started on the violin. I switched to viola partially through my senior year of high school.
Why?
I loved the violin, but the longer I played it, the more I felt like maybe it wasn't a perfect match for me. And I really think that different instruments attract different people. And as soon as I picked up a viola, it's deeper and more mellow. The role in the orchestra is much more kind of within rather than being the melody all the time. And it was just such a good fit for me.
Did you grow up loving or listening to classical music? Did you listen to popular, all kinds? What kind of music did you listen to?
I listened to a lot of classical. My dad is, he knows all the major, you know, popular orchestral works, like the Friday Favorites concerts. Every time we play that program, I go, oh, I heard this 100 times growing up. And he just knows those pieces inside and out. But then the Radiohead concert for me was epic because my older brother always listened to Radiohead, and Radiohead was such a part of my life because, of course, I worshipped my older brother. So I guess I listened to a lot of different music and, you know, basically whatever my family listened to, right. I kind of went along with.
Well, Amy Russell, is there carryover? You can bring kids in or younger people in to hear, you know, music from video games or Radiohead. Will they come back for Mozart or?
Yeah, I think that they will. I hope that they will because just like Amy, you know, I grew up listening to all kinds of things and I love classical music, but I also love indie rock. And I think most people are like that. And we don't really address that, you know. And the Radiohead concert was a great sort of adventure for us because we mashed up Radiohead with Brahms' First Symphony. And so being in the hall that night, you could see people, you know, the anticipation of trying to figure out what Radiohead song was coming next. But they were also totally enthralled when we were playing Brahms. And we were playing Brahms note for note as it appears in the score.
Wow. Yeah. And that's it. I think the live experience as well. I mean, we getting back to this notion of what you hear on when the credits are running or what you can listen to on your iPod. It's a good experience to listen to music. But watching people produce the music as you're listening is a thoroughly different experience. And I'm guessing that that has an impact on a younger audience who thought that the only way you could enjoy music is with earbuds.
Definitely. And I think, too, whenever you, especially we had the kind of after party and talking to different people, people love the concept of live music. And I think that even when it's classical and maybe they're more familiar with indie rock, just understanding that it's a live performance and that there are people who practice, and I think that people are really interested in that.
And the principles behind it. I mean, I know there's this sort of theory abroad that all art should kind of stand on its own and we don't have to know anything about it or the composer or the artist. But isn't there a richness that comes from knowing what the period was and what were the cultural influences of a Beethoven and a Mozart, and that Beethoven was in fact a rebel and that this didn't sound anything like Mozart and he was rebelling. So it may sound to your ear like it is the same, but in fact this was a rebellion against. Knowing that kind of stuff and then listening for those structures enhances the experience and makes you kind of a music lover, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. It always helps to tell the story behind the music, whether it's behind that particular piece or what the composer was going through when they wrote it. And, you know, going back to Liszt and talking about him like he was the original rock star, kind of the original Mick Jagger, and it's totally true, you know.
Women were throwing their keys up on the stage, weren't they?
Yeah, he had the long hair and the jewelry and the great clothes, and
he was the original rock star, as you said. So, and you've got a masterful storyteller tonight and tomorrow night as well.
Absolutely.
Tell us again.
George Takei.
George Takei from
Mr. Sulu.
Mr. Sulu is going to be there.
Yeah.
He tells stories about being on the program and also about the music itself. So he's the announcer, but we'll get a little behind the scenes. Kind of some of the friction that was going on.
We'll have to leave it to Mr. Sulu.
some of the outtakes. All right. Well, it's a great program, and I want to thank you both for being on our show today.
Thanks so much.
Amy Mason plays the viola for the North Carolina Symphony. Amy Russell is artistic administrator for the symphony. North Carolina Symphony holds its Sci-Fi Spectacular tonight and tomorrow night, May Mandy Concert Hall in Raleigh. You can get more information at our website, wnc.org. And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Our website is stateofthings.org, and our program is directed by Alex Granados, produced by Isaac Davey Aronson, Sean Wen, and Nicole Campbell. Adija Manley and Mark Haywood are our interns, Robin Copley, the technical director, Brent Wolf is our news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.